This is Toss Up 21. It's a podcast about what happens after those first 20 toss-ups. It's about Quiz Bowl stories, the matches, the rivalries, the conflicts, and the people who lived them. I'm your host, Noah Prince. In this episode, an interview with David Reinstein. In 2009, I started coaching the Quiz Bowl team at the Illinois Math and Science Academy, which everyone just calls IMSA. In those days, IMSA was no more than a regional threat. Quiz Bowl in the state of Illinois was dominated by powerhouses like Rockford Auburn, Adley Stevenson, and Carbondale. And right up there with them was New Trier. Those of you from northern Illinois know about New Trier, just north of Chicago, a literal stone's throw from Lake Michigan. For the rest of you, New Trier is the model for the high school in Mean Girls. New Trier's Quiz Bowl coach was David Reinstein. David had been the coach of New Trier for over a decade and had an IHSA state championship to show for it. He was also the longtime president of the state's Quiz Bowl Coaches Association. He was a guy who had it all figured out. He was the kind of coach I wanted to be. I dreamed of my teams being up there with his, maybe even beating them. But then in 2011, he stepped down from coaching. Luckily for me, and for Quiz Bowl in general, he stayed with the game. In fact, he got more involved at the national level, and eventually found himself running PACE, the organization that runs the NSC National Championship. David is a fantastic collaborator, mentor, and friend. I'm excited to chat with him again. So, I guess my first question is, taking it back to the beginning, how did you actually learn about Quiz Bowl, or find out about the activity?
Yeah, well, I did it very little myself. I was in one tournament when I was in high school. The tournament was actually at Stevenson, which is, I live two blocks away from there now. I actually remember walking outside the building and seeing this empty field, and I now live in that empty field. Nice. So I was in one tournament in high school, and then there were a couple of intramural tournaments when I was in college at Brown. And so I was in an intramural tournament a couple of times, but again, very little involvement as a participant. And then I started teaching at New Trier in 1994. And when I started teaching, the first week, the activities director went up to me and said, our Scholastic Bowl team only has one coach and we need to have two coaches because there's a varsity and a JV team. And the other coach doesn't drive. So if you're willing to drive the van, we'd like you to be the coach. And so I said, okay, I thought about it. When I became a teacher, I actually wanted to be a math team coach, but it turned out the math team already had a lot of coaches. And so I did Scholastic Bowl. What?
And they could drive.
They could drive, yes. Well, actually, they had enough students, they got a bus. So they got a bus driver. They didn't need to drive. So I became the coach, and that was in 1994. And I ended up coaching for 17 years until 2011. The first tournament I went to, or the first time my team played was David Riley, who was then the coach at Loyola, who was in his second year coaching at Loyola, invited us to play their team. So we went over there, and I ran the JV match, and David ran the varsity match. And we ended up coaching against each other for about 15 years. Loyola and New Trier are only about a mile away. Loyola is actually in our district. And then soon after that, there was a tournament at the University of Chicago that we went to, and we did well there. It's actually the only high school tournament the University of Chicago ever hosted. And basically from that point on, I was hooked, and I got a new assistant coach the next year, and took my team to pretty much every tournament we could get to in Illinois, which at the time was only about three or four tournaments a year. And basically focused on coaching for the first several years. And then at the same time, I started coaching the Illinois started a coaches association, the IHSSBCA, which I did not join quite at first, but about a year in, I joined that and joined the board and eventually became the chair of that, not until 2004. David Riley was actually the chair for several years before me. But basically, I got on their radar because the IHSA at the time was using very bad questions. Noah may actually remember because I may go back to his playing days. When did you graduate high school?
2002.
So they replaced it by the time you graduated. Maybe if you, I don't know if you remember your freshman or sophomore year.
I remember it. Yeah.
But I started a petition to the IHSA saying that they should find another source for their questions. And I got about 50 coaches to sign it and sent it to the IHSA. The IHSA called the new Trier athletic director and said he should put a muzzle on me.
Oh, wow.
And so and he said, that's the activities department. It's not my job. And, you know, that's about as far as that went. So then I became involved in the IHSSBCA and I kept coaching and I started hosting tournaments and writing questions. And it's kind of grown from there. The first set of questions I wrote was actually, I wrote questions specifically for student faculty matches at New Trier. I would write one round a year for that. And, the students would play the teachers and that was a lot of fun. And then after doing that for a few years, I started writing for my own tournaments and a few other things.
So I guess you started coaching in the early 90s. And so Illinois Quiz Bowl seems to have crystallized a little bit in the mid 80s. That's when the IHSA started running its tournament. Do you know what it was like before then? Like, were there a lot of teams or did the creation of the IHSA tournament really encourage a lot of team creation?
That was it. The Masonic started about 2 years before the IHSA, but they were both in the mid-80s. And Scholastic Bowl did exist before then. There were a couple tournaments a year. I think there was one at Streeter. The one I went to at Stevenson, I'm pretty sure, predated the IHSA tournament. So there were a couple tournaments a year. It was a very different activity then. At some point I dug up some of the schedules and questions and things like that. One-line toss-ups at tournaments were the norm until, into the 2000s. If you go back before mid-80s, there were maybe 20, 30 teams in Illinois. If you went to a tournament, people didn't buy buzzers. The teams didn't own buzzers. And so a lot of times the tournament director would build their own buzzer system. A lot of times they were the shop teacher. They worked with the shop teacher. There was a physics teacher who could do that. And so they would build their own buzzer system. Usually they would build two systems. And so at a tournament, there would be two matches going on at a time, typically. There might be 30 teams there, so the whole tournament might be single elimination, so they could get it done in a day, single elimination with a consolation bracket or something along those lines. But if you went to a tournament before the mid-80s, you'd play a match and then you'd sit around for a few hours or watch a few matches or something like that. That changed in the 80s. In the 80s is when you had a huge growth in the number of teams. When I started doing it, there were already 500 teams in Illinois. That hasn't changed since about 1990. Since about 1990, that number's been static. There's been 500 teams in Illinois. What has changed is the format of tournaments and the question quality and things like that. But back then, it was a very different thing. It used to be if you, when the IHSA tournament first started, if you served on the advisory committee, one of your jobs was to write a bunch of questions. You had to write 20 or 30 questions as part of your job of being on the advisory committee. And those were used in the IHSA tournament.
And nowadays, the ADCO members are sometimes, you know, principals and athletic directors. Was that the case then too?
I don't know. I don't know the details on that. Dennis White, who was a coach at Maine East, that's what he told me. So I don't know that. But, you know, obviously the quality of the questions was all over the place, mainly bad. And that's how it works. A lot of the tournaments, they didn't order questions. The teams would show up with index cards with questions on them. And so each team would bring in 10 or 20 questions on index cards, and those would somehow be shuffled in. You know, you wouldn't play on your own questions. It'd be used during your bye, or your byes, because there were so many byes back then. And those were the questions that they used. Also, until about 2000, there weren't really regular rules across the state of Illinois. For one thing, if you look at it nationally, back before 2000, every state had its own set of rules and distribution. There wasn't as much going on between states. But I remember going to a tournament in Northwest Illinois, and they rebounded the bonuses. You would give the first team, the controlling team, would give their answers, and the moderator would say, you got two parts correct. And then the other team was given a shot at the remaining bonus parts, but they weren't told which two parts the other team had correct. So that was part of the game. But things have changed a lot. I mean, when I got started in the 90s, the expectation for tournaments is would be by IHSA rules. The bonuses would be read all at once, and then you'd wait. You know, a team would be given 30 seconds to confer. The questions were usually one sentence long, and there was a lot of computational math, like 20% of the questions were computational math. And all that was normal when I went there. You know, there was also the expectation was that only a few teams would keep playing after lunch. Basically, most of the teams would go there, play five matches, and then get lunch on the way home, and that was it. And then the top teams would come back after lunch and keep playing. That was the norm until maybe 2005 or so.
Yeah, that was certainly all the tournaments I played in high school.
Yeah, that was the expectation. Those tournaments were big. I mean, those tournaments, someone would get 60 teams, and they were big. But, it was a different world than what we have now.
So how did you begin to notice that this just wasn't the way it could be or the way it should be? Like, I never stopped to question it. I just thought this is how Scholastic Bowl is.
Yeah, well, I was actually lucky in terms of I got some good influences on me because, I mean, I do see some states. I mean, there are some states out there where it really hasn't changed from that. They're still doing what we were doing 20 years ago, which is unfortunate. But I was lucky. For one thing, I was in a conference with Dennis White of Maine East, and Dennis insisted that our conference play on pyramidal questions. And it was hard to find pyramidal questions back then, but he would find them. And that's what we would play our conference matches on. And so for me, it was a big disappointment. I would go to Saturday tournaments, and the Saturday tournaments would have these one-liners. But I was exposed from the beginning to pyramidal quiz bowl, just what was going on in my conference. We used questions that were written by Triad Questions, which was a company of University of Illinois students. And there was also a coach at Decatur MacArthur, Tom Durbin. He would run tournaments on pyramidal questions, and he was doing that in the mid-90s. So he did good work. And then the University of Illinois would also host tournaments, and they ran good tournaments, good questions, a format where teams played, teams were guaranteed eight or nine matches or whatever the case was. For a few years, Northwestern ran a tournament using some of the first NAQT sets. that again were, you know, kind of at least fairly close to current standards, maybe not exactly. And certainly if we could see those questions now are horrible compared to what we have now, but they were also wonderful compared to what was normal back at the time. So so I was exposed to good quiz bowl. If I hadn't been exposed to good quiz bowl, I don't know if I would have figured it out myself, but I was exposed to good quiz bowl by several sources, and you know, I was able to recognize that it was better than what a lot of people were doing, and so I pushed more and more people to go in the right direction. And you know, fortunately I wasn't doing that by myself. I was doing that along with a lot of other people, and you know, over time, and it took a whole lot of time, and you know, we lost a lot of battles along the way, but things are in a good place right now.
So it's interesting. So Tom Durbin was and Decatur MacArthur, they were in my conference. So I attended Normal Community High School, not too far from Decatur, and they were in our conference, and so we got to play them a lot every year. And I remember playing them as a freshman and just thinking they were completely unbeatable. Like we had a pretty decent team. I think we got maybe third place in the conference tournament my freshman year, and I was playing on the varsity team at this point. And I want to say that they got 18 toss-ups against us. The only ones we got, I think, were my comp math contributions. We did not understand how they knew the answers so well. Of course, we later learned that what they did was they studied. Turns out that's pretty but Tom had it figured out before anybody else, that there's a way that you can study and prepare. And so they seemed untouchable. I remember the moment that we first beat them. The first match where we actually beat them, it came down to the final question. And if I remember correctly, we were ahead. And Decatur, MacArthur, they kind of took a chance because they, you know, they had to, the onus was on them. And and they made a mistake. And I just, I was kind of awestruck. Like, we just took down Goliath, essentially. And then it became a pretty decent rivalry because, you know, my junior year is when we had our best year, and Decatur was also, MacArthur was always strong. So it was fun. But so I got to play that. And then in 2001, during my junior year, we went to the IHSA state finals. And I remember those questions being at least somewhat pyramidal. Like I still remember beating myself up over some toss-ups that I missed. There was this toss-up on Aldous Huxley in round three that I was really upset I didn't get, because I remember thinking from the beginning, there was some sort of biography clue, and I just remember thinking, this feels like Huxley. And eventually they got to where they were describing in Brave New World or something, and the other team beat us to it. And I just remember thinking, why didn't I buzz? I knew they'd answer sentences ago. So I can say for sure that the questions were multiple sentence, but I don't know that how they would fare against today's pyramidal questions. I doubt less than favorably. I imagine it's less than favorably, but yeah, you could at least tell that at that point, one-liners were sort of on the way out, or at least the tide was changing.
Yeah, that was when Tom Egan took over the IHSA questions. He was in charge of it for 2 years. 2001 was one of those 2 years. And yeah, it had been Answers Plus before then. Tom Egan took it over. Like you say, the questions were pyramidal then. They were much better than what had preceded them. If we were to dig them out now, we'd be groaning at how bad they are. No offense to Tom, who would admit it. But they were light years ahead of where we had been. And so, yeah, you got to see a little bit of that. In the Saturday tournaments then were still very uneven when you were playing. Probably you got some good questions when you went to Decatur MacArthur, and you probably got bad questions when you went pretty much anywhere else, would be my guess.
Yeah, of course, I didn't know that they were bad at the time, but yeah, I agree. That was interesting. When I started coaching then in 2009, I heard a lot of players from other schools, especially when I started reading the forums. I saw people groaning about how bad IHSA questions were. And I didn't understand the criticism at first, because I I was thinking of IHSA, like those were the pinnacle. That was those were the best questions that we got all year long. And so that was our reward for getting as far as we did, is that we actually got to your multi-line questions where you got to think things through and take your time and not have so many buzzer races.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, the IHSA questions became uneven. You know, Tom only did it for a couple of years. He decided to become a coach rather than keep editing. And, and it was just very uneven. There were different writers from year to year. And you typically get, a set that had some good questions and some bad questions. It was just unfortunate the bad questions weren't really edited out. And so it was difficult to play. And especially at that time, there were a lot of good sets out there. And so the better teams were going to 5 to 10 tournaments a year where they were hearing good questions that were controlled, and then they'd go to the IHSA and they'd hear something that was just out of nowhere. And, and some would get upset about it, rightfully so. I mean, really you hope, the IHSA has such a big reputation in Illinois. And I mean, no matter what the quality of it is, people get excited about the IHSA tournament just because it's the IHSA tournament. Mm-hmm. And, it's back in 2009, people were upset. And back in the 1990s, it was the same thing. People were upset because they had high expectations in IHSA, and they'd go and they'd hear these horrible, horrible questions. And, unfortunately, it's gotten better now. Just, the last 2 years, Brad Fisher's been in charge, and the questions have been good for the IHSA tournament. But that's just been the last 2 years. That just started in 2018.
So, going back to your writing, when did you, how did Solo start? Was this your brainchild? Did you conceive the tournament? And, was it your intention from the beginning that you'd be writing it?
Yes. Well, before I started Solo, there was an individual tournament in Illinois. It was called the Ultimate Scholar. It was run at Illinois Wesleyan University, which is down, where is that? That's near Normal, isn't it?
It's in Normal, yeah.
Yeah,
coming to Normal. I mean,
yeah, somewhere in there. I remember one time we were driving to the tournament and got lost. This is before Google Maps, and I asked someone, where's Illinois Wesleyan? And they said, it's just across the street from the Walgreens. It's West of Alpha.
I know the Walgreens they're talking about, but
there you go, near your hometown or in your hometown. Mm-hmm. So, so there used to be a tournament, and it was big. It was it would draw about 180 students a year, and each student was guaranteed 5 matches, and then there were playoffs like that. It wasn't a group final like I do with Solo. It was everything was you play 5 matches, and then if you were in the top 32, you'd go into a single elimination tournament. And just keep playing. And so, it was a Solo tournament. It was 20 toss-ups, just like mine, for each match. So it did have a fair amount in common with the tournament I started. It turned out that when I started the same year that tournament ended, but that was just a coincidence that it happened that way. The tournament director, who was actually very kind to me and actually moderated at Scoville Solo the first year I hosted it, he was nearing retirement and he decided he wouldn't do it anymore. But when I first started it, I figured it would be one of two Solo tournaments in Illinois. It turned out to be the only one. And actually for a couple of years, Donald Taylor ran a small Solo tournament in Champaign. And then there were two tournaments the same year for a couple of years then. But the power matching was new. So I started that. It turns out that I started doing that at the same time that NAQT started using power matching for HSNCT. I wasn't aware of what they were doing and they weren't aware of what I was doing. So it was a complete coincidence. And it actually took about 5 years before we found out what each other was doing, that we were in fact doing the same thing. But I started using power matching. I made this, the first year I made this whole schedule for 128 students, which is where the tournament is now. Unfortunately, I only got 64 students who actually showed up. So the first match was like a warm-up match. I had to redo the schedule. So we did it with 64 kids. Also, I didn't do the power matching exactly right. So there were a lot of repeat matches where kids were playing the same opponent two or three times over the course of the day. So for the second year, I figured that out and figured out how to fix that. That doesn't happen anymore. But I've been running it since the beginning. I've always been the tournament director. Jonah Greenthal helps me out now because he wrote a lot of software that runs the tournament to some extent. But I'm the one who started it. I've been the one in charge of the questions. Some years I write all the questions. Some years I get help. But it's pretty much been my thing other than the program that Jonah wrote. I was getting ready to send out the invitations for the first tournament. And just before I sent out the invitation for the first tournament, someone said, come in the back room. You got to see this. We're watching CNN. And a plane had just gone into the World Trade Center. And so I waited a week to send out the invitations. But if you look at the current events for the first tournament, it's, you know, about this new war in Afghanistan and things like that.
Okay. So that was my senior year in high school. Cause that day is emblazoned in my memory too. I remember my German teacher telling me what had happened and she said a plane had hit the World Trade Center and I thought this was a joke. And I guess it just shows you the state of the world back then that you hear something like that and your mind can't even register it as a real possibility of an event. Whereas now I think if we heard something like that, it's completely different. There's a lot of crazy terrorist sorts of activities that we've just come to, I guess they've normalized somehow. All right, so you coached from 94 to 2011. Now, I started coaching in 2009. And at that point, I feel like, you know, my first year, I was just trying to kind of get the lay of the land of Illinois Quiz Bowl. So I would go to these tournaments and, you know, our teams would play, but mostly I was trying to figure out, well, who are the coaches who seem to have it together? What are the programs that I need to be on the lookout for? And of course, yours was one of the first I picked up on. Of course, Sharon's team at Carbondale was another one, and David Riley's team at Loyola. At our first tournament, we lost to New Trier. Steve Server was your captain at the time.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, so there were a few of these coaches I was looking up to. And then at the end of my second year, you announced that you were leaving. I just, it's like, oh no, he's one of the pillars of Illinois Quiz Bowl. What's going on with that? What made you decide to leave Quiz Bowl when you did? Leave coaching. Sorry.
Yeah, it was really a matter of, just changing my focus. I have three kids and the tournaments were a lot.
How old were they at the time?
Well, let's see here. Now they're 20, 17, and 14. So if that was 8 years ago, they were 8 years younger than that. So they were 6 to 12 at that time. So, for several years, I had other coaches taking the team to the conference tournaments so that I could pick up my kids in daycare. And even the Saturdays, I was going to, you know, a lot of them, but certainly far from all of them. So I had other coaches doing that. For nationals, which my team usually picked one of the two nationals and went to that, I would have another coach do that. And so it was just... my focus was already kind of going away from coaching even at that time, even though I was overseeing the program. I was with my team at a lot of Saturday tournaments, but I had other coaches doing a lot of the work. And really my focus, really the whole time I've been involved in Quiz Bowl, I've been more excited about improving the activity than about improving my team. Improving my team and working my team is certainly something I did and I spent time on, and I'm proud of it. And I had a lot of great kids. I was very fortunate. But I was always more interested in how can we make this activity better? How can we have better tournaments? How can we have better questions and things like that? And so when I gave it up, I really saw, as soon as I gave up coaching, I took over the Masonic questions and I worked on the IHSA questions. And I also became a writer for NAQT. And, and I continued to run the same two tournaments I had been running at New Trier when I was coaching. And so for me, I just saw that as more important and something that fit into my time schedule well and things like that. And with my kids, it was always important that I was home. But, when they weren't infants anymore, a lot of times just being home is enough. My wife is a doctor, and so a lot of times she works on Saturdays. She generally works every second Saturday now. Sometimes it was every third Saturday, depending on how her office is set up. And so sometimes it was difficult for me to be at a tournament all day on a Saturday. But I could write questions all day on a Saturday because I can just sit in the family room and write questions, and my kids can do whatever they're doing. And whenever I want to take a break from writing questions, I can take a break from writing questions, but coaching a tournament, you're either there all day or you're not. So just fitting better with my lifestyle and fitting better with what I wanted to do. So I that's what I did when I gave up coaching. I kept running tournaments. I wrote for Masonics, NAQT, IHSA. I eventually joined Pace after a couple years, and that's where my focus is now, and that's where I want to be. That's what I'm happy with.
So, was it part of the plan that you would also then step up in other sort of leadership? Because you, if I've got the dates right, you were actually IHSS BCA chair even when you were out of coaching. Is that correct?
Yeah, I held on to it for a few years. I was actually, I wanted to hand it off because I felt like it is a coaches association. So I always felt that the chair of it should be an active coach. There are people on the committee who are not active coaches, either they're college students or they're retired coaches like me. But I always felt like the chair should be an active coach. So my term ended about a year after I stopped coaching. I asked around, no one wanted to take over the chair. Eventually the next time up, there were actually two people who ran an election, and Sharon Lorinskis won the election. And so she took it over, but I was telling people to take it over. And I'm still on the board. I still oversee the Hall of Fame selection process, and I'm still involved in that, but I just didn't want to be chair. I wanted the chair to be a coach.
So then how did you get involved with Pace?
Basically with Pace, you get elected in. Twice a year they have an election to elect new members. And, it's better if you get someone to nominate you. It's better if you get someone within Pace to nominate you. And then once you're a member, basically you just help out, and if you help out a lot, then you can run for officer and become officer. So about 5 years ago I joined. I was elected as a member, and after about a year of just helping out with things and doing a little bit of this and that, I became the treasurer, and then I became the president. And this year I'm I'm in charge of outreach. So, but really that's all it is they elect members. If you're not a coach and you're not a high school player, then you're eligible to be a member, and talk to people about PACE if that's something you're interested in. We are looking for members. We do, you know, I'm hoping to expand our outreach this year. And so we want people to join, and we want people to help us out and help help expand Quiz Bowl.
So before you joined PACE, I was told that the way to get into PACE is to be a very good high school player from the East Coast who then graduates on to college. And that's the surest way to get in. So when I found out you became a member, that sort of changed. I figured, okay, well, I guess you have to be a very good high school East Coast player or be David Reinstein.
David Riley actually was a member before me, so.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But there was a trend there for a while. You know, we are more of a national organization now than we were then. And you know, PACE has gone through some phases. But, you know, like I said, if you want to be a member, talk to someone who currently is a member. We have a lot of members now. We just elected some members recently, so you got to wait 6 months till the next election. But if you're interested, talk to me or talk to someone else who's a member. But yeah, I mean, that was a joke. I mean, I told that joke myself a few times.
I've got some specific questions about some of the things you've done, mostly just trying to look at like what your legacy is in your mind and some of the roles you've had. Like, when you think back to a coach, your coaching days, do you have certain memories that stick out, like two or three?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a number of students who stick out as just being, you know, so excited about the activity and, you know, who really became ambassadors for the activity and really just got involved in big ways. Like I said earlier, you know, one of my focuses has been growing the activity and improving the activity. And for me, it was always exciting when I had students do that. You know, a lot of times while they're still in high school or sometimes when they're in college. So, you know, I had one student help start a question writing company back around 2000. David Shalowitz got together with a couple other students who are on Team Illinois, and they started a writing company and they wrote questions for a few tournaments. There was another company that formed, Aegis, that was, again, largely my students, not entirely my students, but largely my students. Carlo Angeli, Nick Matchin, Jonah Greenthal, that were involved in that. The fact that Jonah, to this day, is doing a ton of great work for Quiz Bowl. He's the head editor of the HSNCT. He's got some new position, like chief of operations or something like that at NAQT, and just, you know, just editing a ton of questions for them and improving their website. Andrew Wang was one of my students. He's editing a lot of tournaments and writing and moderating and doing a lot of good work. And so, you know, so that's just been exciting for me, is to see some of my students doing really wonderful things.
What about as IHSSBCA president? Like, what were your initiatives, I guess, that you pushed for?
Well, a lot of times it wasn't, you know, it didn't necessarily come from me, but it was a real exciting time when I was the chair. I was the chair from 2004 to 2014, and there were just a lot of good people with good ideas. And, you know, I wasn't the one coming up with the ideas so much, but I played an important role in implementing them. And there was really a lot of good work done. I mean, Tom Egan pushed for starting the Hall of Fame and an awards banquet. And he had been pushing for years to do that. And when I became chair, we did that. That was one of the first things I did, was to get those off the ground. That was back in 2005. And Jonah Greenthal wanted to improve the kickoffs and the turnabouts, which, you know, and those tournaments go back, you know, those started before I became chair. The kickoff started when Tom Durbin was chair, back in the 90s, and the turnabout started when David Riley was the chair. But, you know, Jonah said, hey, let's really focus on getting these tournaments good. Let's make sure they have good questions, and let's make sure teams are guaranteed at least 7 or 8 matches and all of those good things. And so
in his education at this point, was he in high school or college or after?
He was in it started when he was in college. He did a lot of it when he was in college. It continued after he graduated, but a lot of it was while he was in college. So we did that, and Brad and Kristen were writing the scope set, and they wanted more teams playing on it. So we started the novice tournament, and that was their idea. But I said, "Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that." And so when the coaches association does it, then you get a lot of buy-in, and then you get it occurring across the state, and you get, instead of 20 teams, you get 70 teams or whatever the case may be. So that started while I was chair. And so there were a lot of great things that happened while I was chair, but there's very little that I came in and said, this is what I want to do, and let's do it. And it happened. There was almost nothing that occurred that way. One of my goals when I started out is I wanted more publicity and I wanted more funding, and we failed on both of those ends. But the great things happened, and even though we weren't as good at those things, we really improved the experience for students and for coaches across Illinois. It's a much better game than it was in 2004 when I became the chair, in 1996 when I joined the committee. It's just a much better activity, and that's because of, you know, 5 or 10 people taking the lead and another 10 or 20 people, you know, actively following and picking things up and doing things for their region, and now we're in good shape. And you were in there too. I mean, you were on the coaches association, but you were there at a good time when good things were happening.
Yeah, I enjoyed my couple months on the.
It was more than that.
So I guess the same sort of question with the PACE presidency. What were you pushing for there, and what do you feel like you got to accomplish?
Well, again, I think I was there at a good time. I was there when the organization was growing and becoming more effective, and that's still continuing now. I'm still heavily involved. I'm the VP of outreach this year. I was only the president for 2 years, and I've only been a member for about 5 or 6 years. So I don't think you can look at it and see the same level of change with the IHSSBCA. I was, like I said, I joined in 96 or so, 95, 96, and I'm still on the board. So, in that amount of time, you see just a whole ton of improvement. But with PACE, when I was president, we set up a scholarship that's still going, that helps a student who does Quiz Bowl and does community service and has financial need. We're able to do that each year. And now we're setting it up so where we're able to do more outreach, where we're, I'm looking forward to what we're going to do this year. Hopefully we're going to start a newsletter, do outreach to states that don't have good Quiz Bowls or don't have much Quiz Bowl, which unfortunately is still pretty common in for many states in the country. And so we're looking forward to that. But while I was president, we ran very good NFC tournaments, and part of that was just getting the organization better at kind of looking at each tournament when it happened, deciding, examining what worked well, what didn't work well, figuring out how to do things, take the things that didn't work well and do them better the following year. And so that's the trajectory we're on. And people who've been to the tournaments, they can tell you that the tournament's getting better. It's really a good tournament.
What would you say the best tournament you've ever been a part of was?
The best tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I don't even know.
Could it be a solo or a NutriVarsity?
I don't know. Every tournament is just, it's crazy. I mean, this year for solo, there were a couple of hours that went by where everything was running perfectly. And I was sitting next to Joan and basically just laughing out loud. That, you know, why is this going so well? Why am I not running around trying to fix all these problems that are supposed to happen? You know, during lunch, I dropped some pizza on myself. I thought, oh my God, this is going to be the worst thing that happens today. You know, and then, you know, eventually the server got overwhelmed, and because the tournament's automated, when the server's overwhelmed, the moderators can't read the questions. And so that went on for about 15, 20 minutes before we had to shut down stats to save the server. So that eventually happened. And then there was a delay before the championship started because I didn't set up the buzzers when I was supposed to. I mean, every tournament I've been a part of, it's hard to, you never walk out of there saying, wow, that was perfect, because it never was. It's just, I go to all these tournaments. I spend the entire day putting out fires, and by the end of the day, I can barely stand because I put out so many fires and so many things have gone wrong. But a lot of times at my tournaments, people come up to me and say, "Wow, everything's running well this year. This is thanks for running this smooth tournament." And my reaction is always, "Really? Is that what's happening?" But I've been a part of some great tournaments, and the solos, when it's all said and done, the solos are a success every year, and the Nutria tournaments are a success every year. They run well, and the teams have a good time, and things are done the way they're supposed to.
Yeah, I agree. Never had a bad solo, never had a bad NutriVarsity. All right, so some sort of final wind-up sort of questions here. I'm curious, after all you've done for Quiz Bowl, if you were going to have your like business card printed, what would you put on there? What would it say underneath David Reinstein? Because I don't think there's room for everything.
I would probably just, I would probably just say improver. Leave it at that. I didn't start things, and I didn't, I didn't revolutionize anything, but just, you know, always working to make things better, and I've played a lot of different roles. I mean, I've barely been a participant in the actual activity. I've played it just a couple of times. I am horrible at it whenever I try, but it's just been, improving and promoting it and just being excited about it. And one of the big influences David Reilly had on me is that before I was excited about it, he was excited about it. Mm-hmm. And, he started driving his team hours to go to tournaments. And my first reaction was, really? And then a few months later, I was doing the same thing. And he started writing questions and putting out question sets. And my first reaction was, wow, that takes a lot of time. You sure you want to do that? And then a few months later, I was doing the same thing. And so, that's the way it is. And people have followed me along the way too. I've been lucky, I've worked with good people, and we've been able to improve things and really make things better. And people who are, you're in a position where you can understand what's happened because you saw what the game was like 20 years ago.
I saw what it was like 10 years ago. I can see a huge difference already.
Yeah. I mean, when in Illinois, 10 years ago, there would be a good tournament and like 10 teams would go to it. Mm-hmm. And there would be a bad tournament and like 60 teams would go to it. And now it's like all the tournaments are good. Some of them are big and some of them are small, but pretty much all of them are using pyramidal questions, and teams are guaranteed 8 matches and all these things that are just normal now. I mean, I remember I went to moderate a tournament at at Fenwick about 4 or 5 years ago. Colby Burnett was running the tournament. And I remember just thinking, this is the most boring tournament I've ever seen. There's nothing to complain about. You know, I mean, I had nothing to do with it. All I did is show up and moderate. And, you know, I go there and moderate and everything runs smoothly. There's good questions. There's a good format. The kids are real nice. The coaches know what to expect. It's like, it's like unbelievable.
Nowadays, the things we complain about are, you know, whether it would be more fair to have a crossover playoff bracket or a round robin playoff bracket. And we can fight about whether, like, which of those is more optimal. When I was playing, it was the questions were like, should Quiz Bowl be factually correct? Like, what happens if the question is wrong? A lot of times those deal with it.
Yeah, go with what's in the baggage.
Right. So the things we complain about now are so minute compared to what they used to be that, yeah.
Yeah. I remember thinking, you know, I was thinking we should really do more to publicize Scholastic Bowl. And then I took my team to sectionals. We were playing a real good Loyola team and came down, you know, there was this one toss up that was big in the match. Which state produces the most macadamia nuts? That was the entire toss-up.
Okay.
My team answered it. Hawaii. We won the sectional. We went to state. Loyola, who was probably the better team that year, they didn't go to state. I'm thinking, why would we want to publicize this? What happens if a reporter comes and sees this? But, yeah, I mean, now people get upset because there's one bad question or, you know, one protest gets decided the wrong way, and there was a time when that just wasn't the issue.
Or like the second and third sentences of your six sentence toss up should have been rearranged because one of them is known by 4% of people and the other one is known by 4.7% of people. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I've got a lot of great stuff. I learned a lot here. Thanks so much. I should let you get going, and I should probably get to work at this point. But I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you, and thanks for all the work. You're doing a lot of great stuff, so keep up the good work.
Toss-Up 21 is brought to you by Cubelets. Cubelets offers online Quiz Bowl tournaments you can play at home from your computer. No long drives, no hotels, no gas money. You can find a list of upcoming tournaments at cubelets.online, including a free season opener novice event. If you're new to high school Quiz Bowl, you'll want to play against novices from across the country. Register at cubelets.online. That's cubelitz.online. Calling Brad Fisher. He's a staple on the Northern Illinois Quiz Bowl scene. He was also my assistant coach for 2 years at IMSA.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you ready to play Lawden Thinks?
I am ready to play Lawden Thinks.
Time out. You and the audience might be wondering what we're talking about. Lawden Thinks starts with a question, something like, how many push-ups can I do in an hour? The actual answer isn't important. The only thing that matters is what Lawden thinks the answer is. The players bid back and forth trying to get closer to Lawden's answer, raising their guess until one breaks and gives in. For today's round, David Reinstein himself has agreed to be Lawden. Now, back to the game.
All right, so I have a question for you.
All right.
The question is in the topic of David Reinstein. How many Quiz Bowl questions has David Reinstein written lifetime?
Ah, that's a great question.
Man. I'll go ahead and start the bidding. I think David Reinstein has written at least one Quiz Bowl question in his career.
I think that David Reinstein has, in fact, written three questions in his career.
Wow, okay.
A burden of confidence right there.
Well, let's pick up the pace a little bit here. I read somewhere that when David writes for NAQT, the number of questions he writes in any given month ends with a zero. So I will say that David has written 10 quiz bowl questions in his career.
How do you... Do you just always plan it that it's going to end in a zero? Like, it sounds like the sort of the thing that you'd say if you've never been hired by someone, right?
Yeah. All right, so now the question is, has he written for NAQT more than 1 month, Brad?
Oh, he definitely has. I remember back in the good old days, I remember, at least I think I remember, it was sufficiently long ago, it was like 12 years ago, but I'm pretty sure I remember him writing in the year and a half or so that I wrote for NAQT. I'm pretty sure he wrote a lot for MSNCT. And like, that's the sort of thing that you can really pump out things. I think he's written 15 questions.
All right. Well, I'll pick up the pace a little bit more here. The same article I read that told me about that, that every month ending in a zero, it also said that every year he writes for NAQT, the number of questions ends with two zeros. So I will say he has written 100 questions.
That's definitely the sort of thing you say when you've never written for someone.
Yeah, both of those statements are true for me as well with NAQT.
They might be true for me, but I doubt it. Okay, so in addition to his NAQT writing, which I'm pretty sure is non-zero and positive, he has written Scoble solo questions for a long time. Back when I played back in 05, I was going to say 05, 06, but I guess the calendar hits me. It's 04, 05. I'm pretty sure he wrote every question for Scoble solo back in the good old days. And that includes some very spicy worksheets that I personally enjoyed. I enjoyed them a lot. It was one of the highlights of my senior year of Quiz Bowl was checking, yes, I'm actually submitting this and risking a point on this worksheet. Never thought I'd be able to do that. Got the point, too.
Nice.
So Scoble Solo back then was 14 packets of 23 toss-ups, plus a finals that was like three more. So whatever 17 times 23 is, so let's call that 391 times a few years. I think he's written, let's say 850 questions. I think he's written 850 questions.
Okay. Well, I happen to know that the first Scoble solo was in 2001. And so he's been writing solo for 19 years. And I think it basically works out to about 20 toss-ups a packet, about like 17 packets. So he doesn't write all of it anymore, but he writes most of it.
Right.
So let's just say for 19 years, he's written over 300. We'll call it 20 years at exactly 300. I believe David Reinstein has written 6,000 quiz bowl questions.
I think that when you add up the Scoble solo questions and the NAQT questions, which we haven't done a good job of calculating yet because all we have are like popsicle stick style clues, sort of like given down by the wizened old man of the mountain to sort of help you in your quest to like find a tapestry. I'm going to start thinking of his NAQT production in the like 1,000 range.
Yeah, this is bad for me because I don't know anything about what he did for NAQT. You got a leg up here.
Well, it's been sufficiently long that I don't know if I. You have to imagine that if you're going to write all of Masonics and all of Scoble Solo, and in the small bits where you're exchanging the word write for edit, that's still a ton of work.
Yeah.
Masonics has been going, I'm trying to think here, 6 years, 7 years? When was Reinstein's first Masonics?
I think the first one was in 2012, because I remember coaching that that Masonics, and I feel like the questions were Reinstein-esque.
Because I remember there being the two years that I drove the bus for IMSA, I remember there being two Masonic states, one of which was the terrifying old days, and we didn't even care that, you know, we lost, because it was there was more honor in losing than winning. So Masonics is such a weird thing. It's eight packets twice, and in those eight packets you've got 16 toss-ups, 16 bonuses, and then 5-5 extra. So it's 21-21 times 8 times 2. That's like, it's a little over 600 questions. And of course, he doesn't do all of Masonics himself. He has writers helping with that in a good amount. Let's call him at half for those as well. So if you give him 300 questions for each of the Masonics, that is going to end up being another 2,500 added on. So at long last, and what will surely not be the final, because I'm sure that you're going to go up on this one, I'm putting David Reinstein career at 11,000 questions.
Oh my gosh, you brought out the fifth digit. I was going to bring out the fifth digit, Brad. Oh my. Jeez. Okay. So, all right. So we both sort of agree that 6,000 is about right for Scoble solo. And half of 8 years of Masonics sounds about right. I'd put him at about another 2,400. So we're looking at like 84 plus MEQT. What else has he done? It's going to sound weird, but 11,000 questions sounds low for him. Like, who can say that?
I can't. I cannot say that. That is definitely above what I've done.
All right. I believe that David Reinstein has written 12,024 questions in his career.
I can't let you have it for that. I think that David Reinstein has written 12,345 questions in his career.
Oh my gosh. You're killing me. I don't think I can do it. I'm taking the under.
All right. Excellent. I'm happy with that number. I was willing to go up to 14 or 15,000 because here's the thing, right? A, we forgot Aegis. And by we forgot Aegis, I mean, I haven't said Aegis yet, but Reinstein was involved in helping us out finishing like the Nutria Varsity sets back when that was a house, right?
Oh, that's knowledge to me.
Yeah. So that's not a ton, right? Because Carlo and Nick were the heads for that. And there were other writers. I kicked in some questions. Saying I did anything more than that's going to be an over-exaggeration. But he wrote for that, and that's not an exaggeration. To be honest, also, I don't know what existed before 2004. It wasn't house rights that still exist now, but I can't imagine he didn't write questions for something in between the mid-90s and the mid-2000s when I start, you know, being aware of things. I was willing to go up to 15,000, and if pressed, I could have gone up into the 20,000s. I really think it's that high.
Oh my gosh, 20,000 questions. All right. I guess we'll hear what Laudan has to say. Do you have any idea how many questions you've written lifetime?
It's probably around 15,000.
Yes.
All right. Congratulations. You have out and lodged me this round.
And for the next few as well, I'm sure I will. Easy game.
That's all for this episode of Toss Up 21. I'm your host, Noah Prince. Our theme music is by Mark Wallach. Ad music is by our audio engineer, Grace Prince.